Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The pro-life movement just doesn't have the capacity to understand that there are other people on the right who also have their own thing that they're really passionate about that they want done in like an administrative term, you know? So it's like, for some reason, so like on one hand, yes, you should be angry, right? You should want to stop it at all costs. There's, we should probably be doing more than we're doing now in a radical way to end abortion. But on the flip side, when it comes to like policy and legality and federal abortion bans, it's crazy to make that the only linchpin that an entire political machine can operate around. Because that's just not... Only 8% of the country believes in that abortion is wrong in all cases. Only 8%. Welcome to The Crunch, the only podcast with a guy that's really upset about business cards. It's your boy,
Kaylee,
Ethan.
Kaylee, what am I supposed to do with your business card? It's a square. How am I... Where it doesn't fit in with the other business cards. I don't... Come on.
Our whole thing is that we're a Gen Z comedy podcast for Catholics, and you're doing the most boomer complaint of all time. The business card is square.
It's a
square. They're all rectangles.
You're so old.
Last week you had aura, and this week you've lost all of it immediately at the beginning of the show.
I'm a man of tradition.
No, you're not.
All right. I respect tradition. First of all, the Zoomers are all into Patrick Bateman, and that guy is also obsessed with business.
Yeah, why is that? Oh, because he was a psychopath. That's a good. Oh, actually, you know what? You know who I'm more like now that you mention it? Patrick Bateman. Have you ever seen that film?
Yeah, dude, it's gross.
You have. It is kind of gross. I like the part when he killed the guy, and then he killed the lady, and then he had the heads of the other ladies that he had killed in his freezer.
I like that part.
I like that part.
I like the part where the ATM says, feed me a cat, and he puts the cat in the ATM. I like the part where he goes, I have to return some videotapes, and then leaves.
I like the part where he's so stressed out, and he's running around trying to find the right building to go in, and he shoots the concierge at the desk. The movie's messed up, but it does have these moments that are just like hilarious where he's like so panicked he just kills a guy because he walked into the wrong building. It's funny.
Do you think he killed those people?
I don't know, man. The movie presents it in a way that is unknowable. There's no way to know what's true and what isn't true with the way that it ends. It's one of those postmodern crap things where it's like, What was true? Was it really a critique of capitalism the whole time? And by capitalism, we mean the Christian religion somehow. I hate it when people are like, this is actually a subtle critique of religion when it's just like openly a critique of religion. That makes me mad. I don't like it when people do that.
I know.
There's no way to know what American Psycho actually happened in the film.
Yes.
That's my take. And I don't think it's an uncommon one.
Welcome to The Crunch. This is a movie podcast.
This is a movie podcast.
It's actually a Catholic podcast. We talk about a topic of the faith, and we like to have a few laughs and talk about our business cards. Ethan, what finish did you go with on your business card? Did you go matte or glossy?
Mine kind of has chocolate on the wrapper still. It's been here since this morning. I might get a new one printed.
Staples really messed this one up.
It's Kirkland's signature chewy business card. Pretty gross. I don't think I'm going to get any business with this one. I told him to put my number on the back, and instead it says servings one, serving size one bar, 40 grams, calories 190. What a waste.
Dude, my son loves granola bars, I tell you what. Can't buy enough of them. I would like to know how you're doing, because usually I talk about how I'm doing first.
Oh, but it doesn't matter how I'm doing, you know?
Yeah, it does.
No. I'm always doing poorly, so it's no it's no fun to talk about.
No fun. My life is I live in a fantasy world.
I live in kind of like a Noah Baumbach film. You know what I'm saying?
No.
The dialogue is snappy, but the mood is dour. You know?
Yeah. What films is he known for? This is a movie podcast.
Yeah, not many. He's known for his most popular one is Marriage Story, probably would be the one you would know the most.
Oh, yes. Yes. That one was sad. I didn't like Marriage Story.
Yes. Let's see. There was another one that I was thinking of that I can't remember now.
I thought it was going to be like Toy Story, where the marriage comes to life at night and it runs around a little kid's room, but it was not like that.
Imagine. And Barbie is the other one he's well known for.
That can't possibly be true.
It is true.
Really?
Yeah, he wrote it. He co-wrote Barbie with Greta Gerwig.
Gertwig.
He also worked on Fantastic Mr. Fox, so he's collaborated with Wes Anderson, Greta Gerwig, some other people. Anyway, it's not important who Noah Baumbach is. The important thing is that I'm doing fine. My new job, I've had a new job for about 2 months now, which I really like, but I'm getting adjusted to a, call it, higher standard of work performance than what I've been used to previously. Which is hard. It's like hard to come from a job that's like relatively comfortable, you know, like you're kind of within your lane. You sort of know what you can do. You do it, you know, you clock out at 5. You don't think about it again till 8 the next day. This new job is not like that at all. It's like it's much more intense. It's much more busy. It's not like, I don't know. It's not killing me or anything like that, mm-hmm. but it is definitely an adjustment. I'm being stretched, which is really, really good for me.
Yes.
I really like it because it's forcing me to learn how to work harder and work smarter, believe it or not.
Yeah, I do think that's a really important thing in this stage of our lives is developing skills, because you have to stay ahead. The problem with the jobs where you clock in and don't have to think about it from 5 till the next morning at 8 is that that job is downstream of value creation.
Correct.
So it's always going to be in 5 years,
mm-hmm.
not enough money, you know, because the person who came up with the job description already, you know, built the company that enabled you to just be the widget cranker. Mm-hmm. And so like, as much as I watched you watched The Office 10 years ago and you were like, oh man, those guys' lives suck. And then now you look at 10 years and you're like looking back and like, that's, man, I wish I worked at a job like that and 50K was enough to buy a house.
Yeah.
That seems fun. Hang out with my friends.
It's tough. It's really exciting. It's exciting to go to work every day and be trying to build something. And it's like, it's exciting in a weird way to like fail every day. Like this week I had a couple of, not like horrible failures, but I had some miscues, you know, on like communication or preparation for certain meetings and different things. And I had to like come to terms with that. I was like, okay, I thought that I needed to do this much work to be ready. And I actually needed to do this much work to be ready. And it showed, you know, I got my goose cooked in front of the whole team, but it was good. It was good for me. 'Cause then it's like, okay, man, I'm being held to a higher standard. I want to meet that standard. It's not scary. It's just like, all right, reset the expectations. Let's try again next time. And that's ideally what good teams should do, you know, is everyone holds each other to a higher standard.
Yeah.
You build each other up, you know, when you're doing well. And you pull people up when they're not doing so well, you know? So it's just, it's really nice. So that, and I've got these stupid shelves in my garage that I've been trying to finish this project in the study for like 3 months. I'm so close. All I have left is the top coat and then it'll be done. But I'm tired of these stupid shelves, man. I dream of shelves, dude. Oh. I'm going to do a podcast from the study when it's done, and I'm going to have I'm going to wear my robe and just my robe, and I'm going to have a glass of bourbon, and I'm going to have my bookshelf behind me, and I'm going to be in a big oversized chair, and I'm going to bring my whole camera setup downstairs so that you guys can experience what it's like to be in my cool new study once it's done.
Nice.
I'm going to look like Borden Biederman. So that's how I'm doing. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
How's the baby, man?
Cute, squishy, yes. Plump, red.
You didn't respond to my text today.
About what? Which one?
When you're at the tea party place.
I went to a tea party place. So my little boy Leo got his first real haircut. His mom's given him a haircut before. And we chopped that wild mane off that little lion man. And we went to this really cute little kid haircut place. There's only one in our area, which is an untapped market in my opinion, because you can charge $25 for like a 2 second, you know?
Yeah, dude, that's, people will pay that.
Yeah.
Which
and
is crazy.
It's ridiculous. And so, but that's obviously not enough because you're not always full up and it's just you. So she also does birthday parties. And so it's two chairs. The barbershop is two chairs in the very front. Picture like a normal haircuttery, right? Two chairs in the front. And the rest of the shop is this like fairy garden wonderland with a bunch of toys and trains and stuff. And so Leo got his haircut and he got a little lollipop and he went nuts. Whoa. He had a great time. And so I sent Ethan a picture of me at a tea party with Leo.
Yeah. It was cute.
And it was cute. Yeah, it was fun. He was playing with
and
the
I
party.
And I texted Patrick. I said, I went to the little girl's tea party parlor and everyone there knew you.
Everyone there knew me.
Oh, it's kind of like he got to be like in Willy Wonka a little bit, you know?
Yes. I was the unknown coming out from behind the mirror and scaring the children.
I forgot about that. The Glasgow. Dude,
the Glasgow thing?
That was a crazy meme for like a minute.
It I can't believe that someone was like, I'm gonna create an event using only AI, like nothing else. Not even my own brain to be like, hey, this doesn't make any sense. We gotta redo this.
Yeah, and I have to wonder with the actor playing the spooky guy coming out from behind the mirror, like had he ever seen Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? Like did he
Probably
know?
Not.
That the only scary part about it was how scary good Gene Wilder is in the role of Willy Wonka.
But it also wasn't Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. It was Willy's Chocolate Experience or something like that. It was the Willy. It was Willy's World or something.
Bill's Fudge Time is what.
Bill's Fudge Packery.
Come on. Oh, no.
Sorry.
Dude, you can't be talking like that. We got kids that listen to this show.
Yeah, this is a keep it on in the car with your kids podcast.
Is
nothing
it
nothing like that? No,
no.
I don't think people do that.
Our levels, our audio levels are too bad for people to listen in the car. So
most of our listeners are at the age where their kids don't know if we say something suggestive, and so we're fine.
I want to say something suggestive real quick. Tee me up so I can say something.
Monkeypox. Go.
Sounds like that disease. Ryan, bleep that out. It's funnier if it's bleeped.
Oh my gosh. It's probably going to make it sound worse if it's bleeped.
Just bleep out the whole thing that me and Patrick say. Patrick, my website sucks.
It does, really? Wait, hold on. We've worked really hard on it. It took us ages and ages and ages to put it together. You're telling me that our website is bad?
Yes, we are but simple, humble parish workers. And we tried so hard, but we were so bad at it.
It's probably because I spent all my time studying theology and not digital graphic design.
It's probably because I spent all of my time browsing through WordPress plugins instead of actually making the website.
That'll do it. I have redone a parish website twice in my career because I was the youngest person on staff. I had to work on it. And most parish websites are clunky, poorly written, and horrible and difficult to navigate. And that's why our friend Dan at Briefcase Marketing is sponsoring our podcast to get the word out to you, parish worker, about how you guys can redo your website for a fraction of the cost of what it would cost you to get it done by like some firm that's not even Catholic. They don't even know about the church. Come on, get out of here.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't just parishes. This is any Catholic company that has an old or a cluttered website, or really any company at all. If you work at a small company, if you have a website, Dan at Briefcase Marketing can help you out. This would be a really overwhelming process, Patrick, but they make it really, really simple over at Briefcase Marketing.
Yes. You, most companies that you contract to write a website for you will make you write out the whole website, all of the stuff. They're just making it look pretty. They're not doing any of the content. Dan will actually write the website for you so that you don't have to worry about what's going to convert, what needs to be above the fold. What does above the fold even mean? He takes care of all of that for you.
I send him photos of myself. I say, put this one on the website, put that one on the website, put this one on the website, make this one a GIF, turn me into, make it so that I'm dancing with Trump and Elon Musk AI. And he says, no problem, no problem. I'll include it on the website. Super easy to work with. Loves putting pictures of me on the website. So if that's your bag, he's got it.
Instead of staring at a blank sheet of paper and writing all of your content, he writes everything for you. So takes care of all of that. And if your company or ministry or parish needs a better website, he has a deal that the first three people to fill out our form on our website will get a free rewrite of the hero section of their website. It's the top part of the homepage, the most important part of your website. So the first three people, even if you don't go with them, even if you don't work with them, get a free rewrite of the hero section of your website. So fill out our form at thecrunchcast.com/briefcase. thecrunchcast.com/briefcase. Take it to a form, fill it out, and he'll rewrite the hero section for you. If you love it, he'll work with you. You're going to want to hire him immediately. He's a great guy. Check out his Google reviews. All of his Google reviews are from parish pastors or ministries he's worked with that have given him 5 stars all the way. So go check him out. That's thecrunchcast.com/briefcase.
thecrunchcast.com/briefcase. Thank you so much to Briefcase Marketing for sponsoring this episode of Putting Ethan on Your Parish Website. Do it now. Okay, goodbye.
I saw this really funny. I saw this really funny argument that's like,
yeah,
you gotta, I learned a lesson recently, and it's just when people are being politically stupid, or they're just they have dumb ideas, sometimes you just gotta laugh at them.
Yeah,
like some guy who comments on my stuff all the time, I wrote an article about whether or not a Catholic can vote for Trump now that he's pro-choice, and the conclusion that I came to was yes. The unfortunate conclusion, unfortunately, the reasoning is that also means that it was always okay to vote for a Democrat. That's the problem, because it's remote material cooperation with evil, and so the issue that I think the pro-life movement has, side tangent on a tangent, is that they were like, oh, you can't vote for a Democrat because they're pro-choice, and now everybody's pro-choice, and they're like, ah, shoot, how do we win? You don't. You lost.
You don't. You lost a long time ago.
And he replied like, oh, well, at least Kamala Harris didn't lead an insurrection. And I just commented like, LMAO. And he was like, how dare you laugh at this? And I just kept laughing. It's how you do it. You just have to laugh at people. Because
it's so funny to be get mad about January 6th and call it an insurrection. Because it's like if it was an insurrection, it sucked.
Yeah.
So
it didn't do anything.
So you keep bringing up this thing that clearly failed as like, but look, he tried to do an insurrection. It's like saying, I don't know what it's like saying.
They don't put you in jail for attempted murder.
They do that, though.
Ah, shoot. You're right.
But it's like it has none of the hallmarks of insurrection other than that there were like people in a place where people aren't supposed to go, you know?
And they didn't want the government to be doing what it was doing. Yeah.
They violated the hallowed halls of democracy.
And the peaceful transfer of power.
Did the child sex trafficking not already violate the hallowed halls of democracy? Have we not already done that? Did the blood lobbying for war in the Middle East not already violate the hallowed halls? Like, what is it?
Come on.
What are we talking about? You know, some guy in a yak drinking yak's milk out of a woman's breast in the Capitol building is not the worst thing that's ever happened, even amongst yak's milk and breasts in the Capitol building. There's, you know what I mean?
January 6th is one thing and one thing only. It's hilarious.
It's funny.
It's funny. That's why they put it in a comedy movie. in Jerry Seinfeld's Unfrosted.
They put January 6th in the Pop-Tart movie?
Yeah, dude, they did. They're like certifying.
Hold on.
They're certifying that the cereal mascots are worried that the Pop-Tarts are going to get rid of breakfast cereal. And so they try to stop the FDA from certifying that the Pop-Tarts are okay. And it's oh my gosh, what's his name from Love Actually, the British guy,
Liam Neeson?
No, Hugh Laurie, is that his name?
Hugh Laurie,
Hugh Jackman. Who is it? No, the other guy from Love Actually.
Hugh Grant,
and Hugh Laurie was who's that? Who am I thinking?
He's also an actor, but just a different one.
Different one. Hugh Grant is in there, and he plays the yak guy. He puts on a yak horn. Man, this is a movie podcast. Holy cow.
We just like movies. Hugh Laurie is Dr. House.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hugh Laurie was in Stuart Little. That's who I'm thinking of.
What is that? First of all, you watched the Pop-Tart movie?
Yeah, of course I did.
Dude, we got to get you. Patrick, something that's so interesting to me about you is that you're one of the smartest guys I know, but your movie taste is atrocious. Like, the things that you spend 2 hours watching boggle my mind.
Why wouldn't I watch the Pop-Tart movie?
Because everyone said it was terrible.
It was perfectly okay.
Really? I heard just nothing but negative things about it.
People have bad taste in movies.
Yeah, I'm saying you have bad taste in movies.
It was funny. It was genuinely funny. I had a.
You think so?
You can't take it seriously, right? You can't take it seriously.
What's funnier, the Unfrosted movie or me, your friend of 8 years?
You, my friend of 8 years.
Based.
Yeah, the Unfrosted movie was fine. It wasn't as funny as that one with Zac Efron and John
the
Cena.
The Iron Claw?
Yeah, that movie was hilarious.
Where all the brothers died.
I love generational trauma, baby. Yeah. I love the death of friends. And I'm just kidding. That movie, I've heard that movie was sad. This is not a movie podcast. I was teeing up abortion when
I remember.
We could talk about. We should talk about abortion because a pro life activist.
I don't know. Patrick made me go viral the other day.
I did.
I'm very
good at social media. I'm very good.
And then I kind of followed it up with a good one of my own that. So it was not. It's not all you.
Would you like me to provide some background?
I want to say one thing on the because you have a reply guy and I have a reply guy now too, and I don't know who he is. He's followed by a bunch of comedians that I follow, which is really interesting.
Who is this guy?
I don't know. I don't know his username, but he keeps replying to my tweets. So he responded to my Hogwarts Tua of witchcraft and wizardry tweet, and he said, "You're a Catholic influencer. Why are you making jokes about BJs?" And I was like, I didn't respond. So I was like, I'm not going to dignify that answer. That with an answer. And then he responded to the one of the tweets that I had the other day because it auto plugged the toolkit for the
for
the course. And he was like, "You do realize you're only supposed to plug things when it goes viral, not when it has 57 likes.
If you plug it when it goes viral, it's too late."
It's too late. I know. So I don't understand why this guy is not only taking issue with the content that I'm putting out as a Catholic influencer, but also the strategy as a Catholic influencer. It's like, you don't know who I am. Anyway, I want to have him on the pod.
I don't.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
Hello, it's me from the future. Well, in this podcast, I'm from the future, but for you listening, I'm from the past. And if this ad gets used again, I'm even more in the past. But I'm not in the future for the future me that's recording a future episode that this ad is in. But what I'm going to talk to you today about is the Consecrate America campaign. We just had the year of the 3 years of the Eucharistic Revival and the big National Eucharistic Congress. But Carmel Communications is on a mission to consecrate America to the Eucharist. So you can go to consecrateamerica.com.
We're hoping that we get as many people as possible to sign a petition to the U.S. bishops to consecrate America to the Eucharist. As of right now, I'm looking at the page, 137,000 people have signed. They're aiming for 250,000. You head over to consecrateamerica.com. You can join the petition. Essentially, we believe that the people who believe in the Eucharist should continue to advocate for adoration, reverence in the liturgy. I mean, we can't just stop because the Congress happened and it's over now. It feels like it's over now. We have to keep going. And one of the ways that Carmel Communications is doing this, and they are petitioning the bishops to consecrate America to the Eucharist. 50 million American Catholics have left the Catholic faith in the past 30 years, and it's time to stop seeking worldly solutions to spiritual problems. If we consecrate America, then we will be placing this into God's hands. We will be seeking out a spiritual solution to a spiritual problem. So head on over to consecrateamerica.com. Sign the petition today. I'd like to thank Carmel Communications for sponsoring this episode of The Crunch. Go to consecrateamerica.com. Sign the petition now. See you later.
Anyway, yes.
What were you going to say?
So we, some background on what's going on.
Sure.
If you haven't heard the news, a pro-life person slash influencer who was touted by Students for Life for a very long time because of her story, and has since also known for blocking me and Ethan on Twitter.
I didn't know this.
She blocked us both because I said something. Yeah. I just recognized the username when the story dropped. It was like one of those big Twitter accounts posted that a pro-life activist had an abortion. She posted on her Instagram this story about how she was going to go to college and she found out her and her boyfriend were living together and they found out that she was pregnant. And she was like, I knew right when I got the news I was going to have an abortion. I know. It's pretty crazy. Now,
yeah.
So she was a pro-life activist. She started being a pro-life activist when she was 15. Do you know what she was known for?
Being pro-life.
No. She was known for having been... She was raped when she was 15.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And yes, and she got pregnant and had a miscarriage.
Whoa.
Now.
That's a lot.
This kind of all calls that into question, in my opinion, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's like, oh, did she? True. I don't know. It's like, so, right. I mean, and so I guess she was 15 when this happened. I think it's really irresponsible for Students for Life to prop a 15-year-old up as a spokesperson for the movement at all.
Yeah.
And now she's 21 going to college and she decided to have an abortion. So anyway, a lot of folks on pro-life Twitter world were coming to her defense and not defense, but like being like, wow, like this, she must have been going through so much pain. Like, let's pray for her. And in my opinion, I think that that is hypocritical because everyone turned on Trump immediately. And maybe it's because he's not a pretty girl. I think if he was a pretty girl that he wouldn't have turned on him as quickly.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. I have a lot of thoughts on this because it's so, I saw one other post today. Hold on. If you were one of the people that I quote, if you were one of the people in my replies yesterday telling me I was going to hell, this is from a person who said, we need to pray for this girl. We can't imagine what she's going through right now. She helped so many people on here, which is just like a crazy thing. I just don't understand coming from that angle, like someone who has said that they're pro-life and then has an abortion, to be like, well, they've done so much good, so we need to pray for them. It's like, well, she killed her own kid. So like, maybe we should pray for the soul of the child and not so much like, obviously we should pray for her too, to like repent.
She seems very unrepentant. Like that's the thing.
Yeah. Like she posted on Instagram about it, like very publicly of like, I did this. You know, and so it just feels very weird.
And I think it was okay. Yeah.
It feels very weird to kill someone and then be like, I don't care that I killed someone. And then everyone be like, oh, well, she must be going through a lot.
It's like, well, come on.
Obviously.
It betrays an underlying conviction that we were talking about on our bonus podcast that
yes,
it seems like a lot of the pro-life movement doesn't actually believe that it is murder. Like they don't, it hasn't sunk in deeply. Mm-hmm. And you kind of see this from like people like Abby Johnson, who are absolutely bananas. Like they are, she is so pro-life it hurts.
Yeah.
Like she's kind of intense, but it's because she watched it happen and right. she was like, oh my gosh, this is yeah. murder. Everybody needs to be doing something about this.
Yeah.
I think that's, it's the, perhaps because it's the nature of the thing makes it hard for us to kind of wrap our minds around the evil. But like, yeah. I think we need to use our noggins a little bit more and be like, hey, okay, like this is the same, even though I don't notice, even though I can't see the murder happening, it's still happening. Mm-hmm. I need to at least treat this the way I would treat a murder in cold blood.
Right.
You know, or fratricide, you know, like.
Exactly. This person said today, cause there was a school shooting in Georgia. She said, to all those people who said, you know, yesterday I was going to hell, where is your rage this morning when parents are waking up to an empty bed and no child to send back to school? If we're not pro-life, womb to tomb, our outrage is only performative, which I think is a little bit dishonest. And this is the problem that I think that we have is like, it's, I think that is also performative in a certain sense because it's performative about your opinion on guns. The difference is that like the guy who did the school shooting wasn't an anti-school shooting activist for years before he did it.
It's not like Ryan Hogg or whatever his name is was like, you know what I'm going to do.
Crazy
today?
That that's his name, by the way. Take a minute. What's your last name, sir? Hogg with two G's. I think
or
it's David
Ham
Hogg.
Or something. David it's Hogg.
David Hogg.
I'm glad yeah. you knew who I was talking about. Anyway.
Ryan Hogg.
Ryan
that's what,
Hogg.
That's what I call our producer.
Slaps Hogg. It's just Ryan under the desk.
So I think that's the point there is like, okay, but that's a really common sentiment, right? It's like, oh, you're pro-life. Why don't you care about XYZ thing happening? Why don't you care about the gun problem? Why don't you care about the immigration in the same way that I care about it? Why don't you care about this thing? It's like, it's a fundamentally different issue when a pro-life activist publicly has an abortion and is unrepentant about it. I think it's fine for people to be mad about that thing.
Yes. I think
when someone shoots up a school and then, I don't know. I assume that person was killed or died or something.
Or something, yeah.
It's like, okay, well, I don't have anything to be mad at because like they did a horrible thing and then they killed themselves or they died by cop, you know. So, what do you want me to do? You know,
the justice system is built to deal with people like this. The justice system is not built to deal with murderers of their own infants in the womb.
Correct.
The justice system is not providing justice in this instance, and so we should be mad about it.
Yes, that's actually the proper response to injustice is anger. That's like the thing that's people say that you can't be angry, you know, like Christians aren't supposed to be angry because wrath is a sin. You're not supposed to be wrathful, like hatred. You should hate sin, but you shouldn't like hate people or hate yourself or hate God or anything like that. But like being angry is different. Like anger is good in that it motivates you to act when something is wrong. You know, that's why we have that emotion. Mm-hmm. And so it would be odd to respond to the abortion thing, in a dispassionate, disconnected way. On the flip side, it would also be odd to completely not have any rational brain about the abortion issue too, which is the whole other thing with Trump and IVF and the guy that everyone's accusing of being a Holocaust denier, Daryl Cooper, the historian, martyr mage.
Oh, sure.
Have you seen him?
No.
He was on Tucker the other day.
Mm.
Great podcast. But he made a phenomenal point. I think I brought this up on the bonus show, but the pro-life movement just doesn't have the capacity to understand that there are other people on the right who also have their own thing that they're really passionate about that they want done in like an administrative mm-hmm. term, you know? So it's like for some reason. So like on one hand, yes, you should be angry, right? You should want to stop it at all costs. We should probably be doing more than we're doing now in a radical way to end abortion. But on the flip side, when it comes to like policy and legality and federal abortion bans, it's crazy to make that the only linchpin that an entire political machine can operate around. Cause that's just not Only 8% of the country believes in that abortion is wrong in all cases. Only 8% are what you and I would consider like true pro-lifers.
Correct, yeah.
Most of the country believes in exceptions for rape or incest. And and even more of that is like probably 60, 70% think it's fine within the first 8 weeks. Like most of the country. Mm-hmm. So it's like you were in such a minority position. Yeah. And I don't think people understand that means that we have practical limitations in the world and we have to operate within the bounds of being 8% that believe something. So we have to take progressive wins as we can get them and not like, it's kind of like if you think about the civil rights movement, right? It was like, it started with schools, you know, or it didn't even really start with schools. It started with, I'm not familiar with the full timeline, right? But they kind of went after the buses and then they kind of went after the schools and then it was kind of a diners. It was piecemeal, right? If every black person in America was like, we want to be fully integrated right now, it would have never happened because it would have been too much all at once. There were maybe a few people that would have said, yeah, I'm fine with that. But most of the country, not on board. So it's just...
And now it's unthinkable. Hey.
Exactly. Exactly.
It turns out that, man, you know, now when it happens, it's frowned upon. Maybe I should say that.
What? Being segregated?
Segregation. Yeah. It still happens.
Well, and some people really like segregation.
Critical. Yeah.
They like having safe spaces free from white colonization.
Yeah. You know? And no, no spices on your, not washing your chicken. I'm just
guy who's mad that the bouncer won't let him into the club. What is this? Some kind of space where you against white colonization?
Oh man. But yeah, anyway. I think it's a tough situation to be in because it's like most of us, we grew up in a world where we believed that everything, you know, that justice was done and that, you know, everybody generally wants to do the right thing. So it's hard to accept that it's hard to accept that you're at an 8%.
Yeah.
Especially when everybody you know believes that abortion is wrong in all cases. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which everybody I know agrees with that.
Right. Spoiler alert, most people, even in the pro-life movement, people who donate, people who volunteer, when push comes to shove, would still probably say, oh, yeah, I mean, if my daughter got raped, you know, I would understand. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, because that's just how people are, you know? And it's like, it's just crazy to have this puritanical expectation. And people will say, like, well, we can't compromise because we're, as Catholics, we should never compromise with evil. And to that, I would say, okay, have fun getting nothing done ever.
Because that's also not true.
Yeah.
That's not, my priest gave a fantastic homily last Sunday. He was reading, directly from a printout, which he never does. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, he's being careful.
He's being precise.
Because there's an amendment on the ballot for Florida, like that no law can be passed that would prevent medical care. And it's very like, carefully worded to make abortion legal in Florida,
right.
Like constitutionally legal in Florida, a constitutional right. And he was talking about how it's morally wrong to vote, like voting on that amendment is not the same as voting for a pro-life candidate and voting for a pro-choice candidate is not the same as voting on that amendment. And he was talking about the differences. Like there's differences between cooperation with evil. You're formally cooperating with evil means you're doing the evil thing with the evil person, but materially cooperating with evil means you're like giving materials that person uses to do the evil. And so
yeah, it's the difference between cooking meth with Walter White and just selling him the methylene.
Yes, precisely. And so material cooperation with evil would be like, you're selling him the methylene, right? And then it's proximate material cooperation if you're giving it to him for the purpose of cooking meth. But if you're just like selling it to him at a store and you have no idea, you're still cooperating with evil. Right. but you don't know it. Now, what if you do know that someone is doing an evil thing? The best example is like paying taxes. You know that your money is going to go, some of it, to abortion. And so is it moral for you to pay taxes? Yes, because if you don't, a greater evil will come out of that, meaning you will go to jail and your family yes. will suffer. Yes. And so you are, every one of us, materially cooperates with evil in some way. And so it is morally licit for you to vote for a pro-choice candidate. It always has been. It was just easier for the pro-life movement to say, don't vote Democrat because they're all pro-choice. It's like, yes, if you're when push comes to shove, it's more likely that the Republicans are going to overturn Roe v. Wade. And they did. And so now they're both pro-choice. So now the pro-life movement's kind of up the creek because according to their past rhetoric, you can't vote for a pro-choice candidate. So yeah. now they have to push third party, which is just
stupid.
It's stupid. It's wishful thinking. Yeah.
It's not a very mature way to view politics in sort of black and white. It has to be this way or it has to be that way. People like to try to cop out of this stuff because to truly wrestle with it means that you need to be comfortable being close to things that you disagree with, right? That's like the hard part about voting for Trump. If you don't like his rhetoric or if you don't agree with some of his opinions, it's also the hard part about voting for Kamala. Same thing, right? If you don't like what she stands for. And that makes people uncomfortable, so they waffle. So they're like, well, actually, I'm team giant meteor 2024. I want it all to blow up, which is like the Reddit way of getting out of it.
Yeah.
Or you just say, well, I'm not going to vote, you know? And it's like, okay, that's fine. I think there's a better path, and it's actually engaging with it and not being afraid of it.
Yeah.
Like there, you are going to have to interface with evil. At some point in your life, there's going to be death. There's going to be illness. There's going to be brutality, things that happen to you that are unfair, things that you cause, you know, like think about being a parent, right? You're probably going to yell at Leo at some point.
I did earlier today.
Right. I got really frustrated with Peter because it takes him an hour and a half to go to freaking sleep. And he wants to sing instead of go to bed.
Man, that's so cute, but it sucks.
Oh, it sucks in the moment when you've been in there for an hour and you have things to do. And you're just like, shut up. And then you're like, oh, I shouldn't tell my kid to shut up. He's not even 2 years old. You know,
he's
like,
just that's, singing, man.
But it's like, or, you know, at some point I'm probably going to yell at him or you're going to yell at your kids and you're going to like put some fear in them that they don't need to have. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be because of something you did and you're going to apologize for it. It's not going to be like, you know, intentional. Like you're not trying to hurt these kids. You're trying to do your best and some evil comes out of it. Right. And it's just like, that's just part of living in the world, you know? And so to try it. So when we treat politics like this thing that like is preserved from me having to reckon with that it's faulty. It feels like it's like a video game or it's like some type of thing that is separate from the rest of life that we should be able to control totally. It's like a weird God complex that comes along with democracy where mm-hmm. it's like, I feel entitled to getting exactly what I want because I've been given a say in this process. It is Saturday. I'm about to watch some college football. I got the K-State polo on. As some of you know, my love for college football is another indication of my further swing to the right that you might have noticed on the podcast. One of the other things that's more right-wing about me lately is that I really, really hate censorship. I really don't like big tech using their monopoly over the technology that we use every day, silencing people that frankly say things that are true about the Catholic Church, about Catholic social teaching. There's a lot of repression about the truth that's going on out there in big tech land. That's why our sponsor, Patmos Hosting Solutions, is one of the best sponsors we've ever had because I think they're actually doing something of value. Our website is hosted on Patmos. They are our island of refuge from big tech. That's one of the things that they say. They provide a few different things. Top-notch web and app development services, hosting,
AI GPU services, and they're all backed. This is the thing I really like about them. No censorship guarantee. So even if they completely disagreed with you, they would still host you. They would still put you out on the web. They would make sure you don't get deplatformed because they agree that you should be allowed to say what you want to say, right? You should not be censored because of ideological differences. I say a lot of things on this podcast that maybe would get me canceled otherwise, but Patmos, because I'm not worried about that, they always take care of me, which is really, really nice. I have my own person to talk to. I could talk to Camila anytime I have an issue or a question about what's going with Patmos, and they never offshore or sub out any of their work. There's just no better value in tech. So if you are looking to build an app or website or host a current site, or you know someone who's looking to do any of these things, go to patmos.tech. They can help out businesses or missions. So if you're in the church world, they can help you no matter what size you are. There's no cost amount that is the minimum threshold. They want to help everybody who wants this type of service with the great value that they provide. Let's see, the last thing here. Oh, I didn't include this in some of the other ads. You get 10% off your next web project or free hosting migration if you tell them The Crunch sent you. That's 10% off. We need to go back and we need to update some. I'm going to say this a lot more. 10% off if you tell them that The Crunch sent you. That's patmos.tech. Patmos, freedom as a service. Go to patmos.tech, tell them The Crunch sent you. Get 10% off for your favorite mission, organization, church, or business. That's patmos.tech. They keep us free. Thank you, Patmos, for sponsoring this episode of The Crunch.
Yeah, voting is a tough moral decision, and I think people they want it to be uniform and obvious. We want it to be uniform and obvious, but you have to make a moral decision using your mm-hmm. conscience, and just understand that no candidate is inherently morally wrong. Voting for any candidate is not inherently morally wrong, because if you accept that voting for Trump is not inherently morally evil, then you also have to accept, unfortunately, that voting for Kamala is not inherently morally wrong, unless you're doing it for the express purpose of bringing more evil about, which would be morally wrong. That's a defect in your intention, which can make a moral act evil. All of this is to say is that you can't get mad at someone for making a different moral choice in the same situation as you.
Can think that someone makes your choice is moral, but it's wrong.
Oh yes. You can
or
think
stupid.
That. Yeah. You can think that. But it comes down to what choice is more appropriate. Mm. Mm-hmm. What choice is wiser? I've gone back and forth on this every time Donald Trump has been on the ballot, which is three mm-hmm. times now. Mm-hmm. I legitimately can't remember if I've ever voted for him before. But
I voted for him in 2020. I voted for Mike McMullen in 2016.
Me too, man. Like I know. I remember idiot. That one. I can't remember if I voted for him in 2020. I think I may have not voted for president in 2020.
Yeah.
Which probably means that since I left the ballot unfilled, probably means someone in PA checked that Biden box and I voted for Biden.
They probably did, dude.
They probably saw that ballot.
Darn it,
and they were
Patrick.
Like, I know. I should have known better. But I do remember thinking about doing every election except for the presidential. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's weird. It's such a strange. It's kind of deep in like the American psyche, this like purity thing. Like every movement has to be intellectually pure mm-hmm. in the same way. We cannot tolerate any type of misstep in mm-hmm. orthodoxy. You know, like if it's Hollywood, if you step outside of the approved Hollywood party line, you're out. You can't act in movies anymore. If it's politics, if you step outside of the Democrat line or the Republican line, you're out. You're not in it anymore. You know, in church, obviously, in the pro-life movement, in the gay movement, right? It, like J.K. Rowling is this great example. We just mm-hmm. talked about her last week, but like
step
she stepped
out line,
outside. She stepped out of line. She's still making $1 billion, which is great for her. But she's, you know, she got cut out of her own like 25th anniversary, like that movie thing that they made, the documentary about the Harry Potter. Like they didn't put her in, even though she's the one that created the whole thing.
Which is just the funniest thing, because she doesn't,
yeah.
because she doesn't agree with something that 1% of the entire global population does.
Yes.
So that's a crime. Lock me up.
Right. So I think it's, we have a very weird problem that I don't think exists in other countries in the same way. This like mm-hmm. need to be, it's like the hyper uniformity of opinion, but also like the max individualism.
Yeah.
It just creates this like crazy unsustainable social pressure.
Oh yeah. It's a, it's the constant, like ever, everything gets ever further and further apart because we're, this is what happens with cognitive dissonance is you, you're believing two contradictory things and they get further and further apart and become more and more nonsensical. And this is what happens with like the totalitarian state and the libertarian individual. It's like the group think and the liberated individual. In order to liberate the individual more, we create more and more groupthink. In order for everyone to have their own car, we build the interstates. You know, in order for everyone to, you know, go to their own, everyone to pursue their own education, we build this monolith of a university approvals, accreditation system, right? It's like everything gets further and further. And the more individualism you get, the more statism you get. And that's the long and short of it, is that totalitarianism and libertarianism is the same thing.
Gasp. We're back to 2019 podcasting. They're actually both the same, guys.
they just end in the same place. The totalitarians and the libertarians are on the same team. They just don't know it.
Yeah. So I think the solution with abortion is not looking to... I talked to Toivo online about this because I respect his opinion a lot. I think he's a smart person. He frequently has...
You just made fun of me for an opinion that I know for a fact Toivo shares.
I wasn't making fun of you. I was saying that we plumbed the depths of that topic.
We've gone to that well before. Yeah,
we have. Yes. I think it's a fine opinion. I agree with it. But I was talking to him. And I think he's really smart. If you don't follow ORV Bells on Twitter, you should, because he frequently has insights that make me genuinely stop for a moment and be like, how did he think of it?
Holy cow.
You know, that's like frustrating to me when people like you or him, I'm like, man, I should have got there first. It feels so obvious when you read it, but then I'm like, I didn't even stop to think about that. Anyway, I was talking to him about all this stuff and he's like, people don't realize that politics is just, it's friendship. It's like using your social influence to like he had a point that was really good. It was like every conversion comes first from social pressure. So it's like, if someone, this is the importance of church, right? So if someone gets invited into a social group and all of those people are Christian, it's so much more likely that person will socially decide that they're a part of the group before they spiritually decide that they're a part of the group. That's like almost a guarantee in every single situation. Same thing with politics. So if you become friends with your local politician, which you can do, you can look them up. You can look up your county commissioner or whatever, you know, at whatever level you want to look, you can look them up and say, hey, can I buy you lunch? You know, can I come to your office and meet you? You know, and then you can like become friends with the people that are like at your local level and you can invest in friends. You can invite them into your life. You know, you can, it might be more difficult in some circumstances rather than others, but that is how real change happens, is by using your own personality to socially influence the things around you. That could be as simple as like, who are the cops that patrol your neighborhood? Who is the, you know, who's the mayor of your town? That might be, I mean, if you live in New York or whatever, that's tough, but like who's your local state Senate representative? Who's your local House representative? Who sits on your city council? Like those are all things that you can, it's all public. You can send them an email, you know? So it's that's how real change would happen in theory, not by wish casting things onto the federal level and saying like, please, you know, do this. I thought that was a really good point.
Yeah, by the way, that was also by design. I wrote a thread about the common good and I wrote a thread about Catholic social teaching, and I mentioned subsidiarity about how things are supposed to be handled at the most local level possible. And someone was like, oh, federalism. And I was like, they're like, that's an American thing. And I was like, oh, you poor, simple child. No, it was designed. Federalism is by design, making all of the little tendrils of society focus at the top. that's in the Federalist Papers. Hamilton was like, yeah, we'll have like a federal government, but eventually everyone's just going to focus on becoming part of the federal government because it's the highest.
Yes.
And no one wants to be a part of the lower thing. No one wants to be on the county commissioner. Everyone wants to be in Congress, you know? And so we're all going to focus on Congress. It's by design. Federalism is inherently anti-subsidiarity.
I'm going to read this real quick. Which is
why I think you can't change the system. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm going to read this DM real quick from Toivo. You're a political agent in your day-to-day activities. You influence people continuously through conversation and relationships. You can actually just go be friends with people, even and especially politicians. Classic activism doesn't really do much. It's more of an expression of power rather than a challenge to it. And when it's successful, it's firmly in the city of man. You subjugated your enemy. But as corny as it sounds, politics via friendship is not only more effective, it's literally the city of God, politics predicated on charity.
Boom.
I love it. I think it's just a great framework to operate out of.
He was the guy that invited me to that recent political philosophy class that I took a couple years ago. It was just, he's a great guy to know. He's very intelligent.
Yeah. Same thing with, and it's the same thing with him. Like the reason that I learned that is because I DM'd him because I think he's interesting. And I don't think we're friends per se, but like, I feel like if I was in the same town as him, I could spend time with him and we'd have a good time.
Because, he'd invite you to his house. He's a very nice guy.
I'm sure he would. But you can just become friends with people. Not me. Do not DM me. But you can just go and become friends with people. And that's how you change the world,
man. He was
talking
to me. That's the problem. Who? You were.
No, I like it when you text me.
It's true. I mean, it's all about network. Like that's... Every new endeavor that I've gone into, that's the thing that people teach you when you go in. It's like when I was a youth minister, mm-hmm. like you got to be friends with other youth ministers. When I went into sales, they were like, you got to join the Chamber of Commerce. You got to join networking groups. When I started trying to grow on Twitter, like AOP was like, you got to be friends with people on Twitter. You got to network and DM with people on Twitter. It's people think that it's tactics sitting in my room by myself is going to make some difference. Or going out and like rallying everyone on a massive scale. And it's like, you can't automate, you can't have that kind of leverage until you have influenced on the one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't sell 100 people in a room on something until you've sold one-to-one a million times.
Right.
You know, an effective politician is someone who has influenced people their entire lives. That's why they're just natural born politicians. They know how to influence on mass because they do it all the time one-to-one. And so like, if you want to be an activist, go make a lot of friends and figure out how to get people to agree with you. Most people can't get people to agree with them because they're like shrews.
Yeah. Because someone brings up abortion and they're like, well, the Catholic teaching is that abortion is against the rules. And it's like, and then that person never wants to talk to you again. Yeah. That's literally what people do. So we should do a whole course on how to be friends with people and sell it for an affordable price on
go to thecrunchcast.com/course and you can access our course on how to convince your friends to be Catholic. Man,
we should do a course on how to make friends. It'd be top of funnel for our convince your friends course. Make your friends course, then convince them, then convert them, and then
introduce them to the Crunch podcast and have them become patrons.
Yes.
Patreon.com/thecrunch.
It all leads back to us.
This has been very helpful. I'm glad that we talked about the recent thing, the general thing, and the practicals. That's a classic Crunch episode.
You know me, man.
I think this is a good one. If you guys let us know what you thought about this episode on our Discord, you go to bit.ly/crunchdiscord, go to the recent episode forum, and you can find the conversation about this episode. And you can tell us how wrong we are and, you know, that Ethan was wrong about the civil rights movement. Did you know that Rosa Parks was alive for Shrek 2? did you know that?
Dude, that's why.
Rosa Parks could have seen Shrek 2. Isn't that crazy?
She probably did. And I hope she did. And she probably sat in the front. God bless her.
I can't believe she lived long enough to not only see black people in the front of the bus, but also see them on the big screen as Donkey.
Yes. Finally. what I've been wanting my whole life, my whole activism career, so that Edward Murphy can be a talking donkey on the
animated
movie.
Could you imagine being Eddie
Murphy?
Could you imagine being Eddie Murphy and being like, I hope Rosa Parks sees my performance as donkey in DreamWorks Shrek 2?
Yeah.
I hope she did. Rosa Parks.
If I ever get to interview Eddie Murphy, that'd be the first question I ask.
Do you think Rosa Parks saw Shrek 2?
Do you think Rosa... Are you okay if I call her Rosa? Do you think she saw Shrek before she passed? What do you think she would have said about the fact that Shrek made Donkey sit on the back of the onion carriage in Shrek 2?
Ooh. Green people, man.
Ogres, dude. They're so mean. They're so canonically mean. Despite their hero's journey in the first film.
Ugh.
All right. Are we good? Can we wrap it up? Who are our sponsors? We got some sponsors this week. We need to think.
At this point, it doesn't make sense for us to put our sponsors at the end of every episode because they're changing and cycling so much that they are different by the time.
Patmos is always locked.
Patmos is locked in.
Thank you, Patmos. Thank you to Briefcase Marketing. Thank you to Carmel Communications.
It's just the Carmel Communications is the publicity. We don't need to. They're the publicity firm that's promoting the UK.
They're the name. They're the name on the invoice, and I'm going to thank them.
Thank you to Consecrate America for sponsoring this episode. You can
go to consecrateamerica.com. Sign the petition. Patrick, do you have anything else for the people?
If you like calls to action, we've got them. We got plenty. We got many. But remember, the only call to action that we want you to do is repent and believe in the gospel. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening. Please pray for us. We'll be praying for you. We'll see you all next time.